beach easy.
I'm glad to be out of my 30s and 40s. Like, really glad. Those were rough decades, and I think it's rough decades for many women. I am taking life a little less seriously. I'm trying to take life a little less seriously. Trying not to be so concerned with the outcome and the plan. And if I can master that, I think I'll be golden.
Welcome to Life's a Beach and Then You Die. From personal growth and self-discovery to challenges and victories, we discuss it all. Join us as we dive into the extraordinary stories of ordinary people all the way to the end.
Welcome to Life's a Beach and Then You Die. I'm Julie Ellis, and in this episode, we'll hear Leslie O'Neill's story. Leslie grew up in the Bronx with her father. Her parents had separated when she was very young. And though she loved her father and the Bronx, she chose to move to New Jersey when she was in high school to live with her mom. It was a stark change going from the big city to a rural environment with horses and open land. And after struggling to find her place, she finally found a group of friends that she became close to. Then, tragedy struck her and her friends their senior year.
So I ended up having a huge core group of friends by junior year, very embedded in the school, in my community. It was a small community. So we, you know, everybody was close at that point that had, you know, gone through the 3 years of school. So we had a very large group of friends. And starting early in senior year, we had a lot of deaths in our senior class. Cancer was one, a house fire, which was very tragic. And then I had a boyfriend who died in a mountain climbing accident. And along with him was another friend of ours who had gone on this mountain climbing trip to New Hampshire.
Oh, my gosh.
And they both died 17, 18.
For how long had you been together?
We had not been together that long. This happened over Easter break, and I believe that was April, and we had been together like the November before. So it was like a fast and furious type of high school romance.
Do you know what happened on the mountain?
Well, they were up at the White in New Hampshire, White Mountains, and what they found at one of like the look over points is both of their hiking boots. And there was a new pair of hiking boots involved. So they think they took their hiking boots off to rest their feet or whatever and slipped, but nobody really knows
for
sure.
They just found their bodies.
They didn't find the bodies right away, and then they did find the bodies a couple of weeks later. So there was a group of them. There was like five or six of our classmates that when it was Easter break, I did not go because I had my wisdom teeth taken out. So I stayed home.
Oh, wow. Where were you when you got the news?
I was lying in my bed, doped up on Oxycontin or something for my wisdom teeth. It was crazy. But what was very strange about that whole time was I had four impacted wisdom teeth, so I was pretty much out of it the whole week. And I had tried to call up there. They were staying like at somebody's house, and I had tried to call up there, and I couldn't get in contact with. This was before cell phones. There were no cell phones back mm-hmm. then. So I couldn't get in contact with anybody, and I was like, something's not right. Something is not right. And then they had been passed for quite a few days before I found out because nobody wanted to come over and tell me. So then finally one of my best friends came over and gave me the news, and it was just downhill from there. And it was a community tragedy.
Yeah.
So
what was his name?
David was his name. Yeah.
How did you feel at that moment when she told you, like, what went through your mind?
I was just out of control, literally. Yeah. I was out of control. You know, I think the first was disbelief, but I knew there was something wrong anyway, innately, something wasn't right. And then I was angry. I was frustrated that everybody kept it from me for a couple of days. I was devastated, you know, absolutely devastated. And I was also still kind of on all these pain meds. So, you know, I was just a mess. I was a mess. And, it was Easter break, so I remember going back to school Which was horrific.
Did a lot of kids have things to say to you about it?
Yeah, and we were all such a mess. Oh. It was just a really messy time. And I didn't even stay at school. I had to leave. It was just really just too much. So it was a tough, and it was our senior year. So come graduation, there was a bunch of people missing. So that was really hard too.
Was your mom there for you? Did you have a close relationship?
My mom was there, but I didn't care. Like, nobody could soothe me. I was hard to deal with anyway at that age. Mm-hmm. So I was close with my mom, but it didn't help. It made it almost worse because I was going to handle it my way, myself. You know, I would not come home some nights. And I was an uber responsible person, which was a good thing because with all my irresponsibility, I survived. Mm-hmm. But I definitely could have not, you know, if I was a different personality to start with. So that lasted for a while.
I was going to ask how long you stewed in that kind of grief because that must have been so traumatic.
The grief took years.
Yeah.
Took years. But I soothed it other ways, right? So life goes on. You know, it took me a long time. I'm going to say it was a good year before I got my act back together. My parents had a condo in Florida at the time, my mom and my stepdad, I should say. So I made a decision that I was going to move to Florida into that condo and I was going to continue school down there. It was a decision that made sense, especially because I was kind of lost. And then some of my friends were getting married because back then, you know, people were getting married in their early 20s, 19, 20, 21. That was not uncommon. So people were getting married. People were going off to school, living their life. And I was going to move. And then I met my first husband right before I was getting ready to leave for Florida.
How old were you at that time?
I met him when I was 19.
So just a couple years out from your tragic loss. And do you think you glommed on to him just to help you recover?
Yeah, there it was so dysfunctional. Yeah. I was so dysfunctional. But he was 10 years older than me. And I think I saw it as, okay, this is good. You know, like stability. Mm-hmm. I was messed up. He was stable. So I ended up staying. I didn't leave as planned. And then I sort of pushed the issue of, well, let's get married. You know, I think I was looking for stability. I had lost so much. And we got married, and I was just shy of my 21st or 22nd, I forget, one birthday. Yeah.
So
it was quick. It was so,
so
quick.
Young in retrospect, right? I mean, you think you're grown up when you're that age, but you're so not.
Yeah, I was so not grown
How
up.
How did your family feel about that marriage?
The honest truth is nobody was happy about it. Mm-mm. They weren't happy about
it.
They thought I was making a mistake, you know, especially given my history at that point. But I was as stubborn as the day is long. That's one thing that's never left me is my stubbornness. So I was determined to make it work. You know, I'm this type of personality, like is I'm pretty responsible, stoic, responsible, stubborn, and capable and independent. Mm-hmm. So even with all my stuff, I still functioned very well.
Right.
You know, I always had a job. I always worked. I loved to work. And then my next thing was I wanted a baby. You know, so that was the next step. But we were together quite a few years. I was 25 when I had my daughter, and that was very planned. And the goal was for me not to work, to be a stay-at-home mom. So we kind of planned it all around that. Mm-hmm. I had my daughter at 25.
What did that feel like?
Oh, that was the best day of my life.
Yeah.
Truly the best day of my life. I remember thinking, how could you be so not in love with this child? Yeah, it's very emotional for me.
Yeah.
Truly the best day of my life when she was born. Immediate connection. And I think also a feeling of love that I never really felt.
Leslie loved her daughter and the son who came later, and she became a stay-at-home mom. She was fully invested in making her home a happy and welcoming space, but over time, some issues started to arise in the marriage. Her husband would often berate her and was generally unsupportive. She had to go through postpartum depression alone, and her family was not happy and peaceful, which is all she had ever wanted for her children and for herself.
You know, there's some factors. I was young, and I was young and also emotionally inept. I just was not equipped to stand up for myself in a good communicative way, right?
And because you just wanted to shut it off and make
it stop. I'm a runaway.
Yeah.
I'm a runaway personality. Mm-hmm. Don't like it, leave it.
Yeah.
I've always been like that. And survival. Mm-hmm. I came out that way, I think.
Yeah.
It served me well, and it has served me not so well.
Yeah.
You know, just depending on the situation. And I don't think he was emotionally equipped. I think we were both emotional messes in our own ways, in our own right, with our own backgrounds, and neither one of us were equipped for what we set out to do together. He had definitely a mean spirit at times, and his words could be very nasty and very hurtful. And I was super sensitive for such a stubborn, stoic person, very ultra sensitive. So it just, I think it was destined to go bad. And we worked at it. Oh, we worked at it. We went to therapy. We did all the things.
Yeah.
And then finally, I couldn't do all the things anymore. I just didn't want to. I didn't have the energy. And I ended the marriage. He would have stayed. He would have continued on because that was his personality.
Yeah.
And I finally said, I can't do it anymore. And my kids were like 9 and 7.
Yeah.
So it was not a short-lived marriage. We were together for a long time. I think we were together almost 14 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's commendable that you did the work and you tried. But there comes a point where you're just beating a dead horse and you have to admit to each other that it's just time to move on. And you were able to do that. That takes a lot of strength.
Yeah. And I did it for my kids.
Yes.
I really did not want my kids to be in that situation. And, you know, a lot of people didn't see it that way. You know, yes, I wanted out. There was no question. But I just could not have my kids
in that situation.
So we got divorced. And that was in the late 80s. So what makes that story really crazy is we actually lived together for 6 months post our divorce in the same house because it was when the market crashed and we couldn't sell our house and all our equity and everything that was going to get split up was in our home.
Oh.
So we lived together in the same home.
How did that go?
It went because we didn't have an option.
Was it tense, though, or were you just
Honestly, at that point, I was like, good. I was, you know, it was over.
Yeah, you're probably fine.
You know, it was, again, it was just what we had to do.
Yeah.
And then we stayed in the same town together. And, you know, a lot of people didn't even know we were divorced because we'd go to the games together. One thing that we did agree on is that, you know, we were parenting together. And that the kids would suffer the least possible. I mean, they suffered plenty, but the least possible as coming from divorce.
Right.
So that
just want to minimize that.
Yeah.
It was a challenge adjusting to not being married, but it was better. She was happy and relieved, and then love came into her life.
I knew Matt previously. He was also a good friend of my ex-husband's. And there was no romantic anything prior to us being together and becoming a couple. We actually were friends as couples. He was married as well. And it just kind of unfolded. A lot of people didn't believe that, but it did. It just kind of unfolded. We were very well suited for each other in our personalities. And so we became a couple and we ended up getting married in 2001, buying a house in the same town. I never moved out of the town that my children were born in and started establishing our own life. And he had a daughter who was much younger than my children. I think my kids were like late middle school and early high school when we
How did
together.
That blend go?
It was hard. It was hard because of the history, the family history. You know, Matt and my ex-husband, Kevin, had siblings that were the same age, so they had known each other well. They both came from the same town. So, you know, and a lot of people thought this, you know, we had been having an affair and all this stuff before the everything went bad. So it was hard, but it eventually worked out. And everybody agreed to accept the fact that we were together. And I think for the kids, it was difficult, but they didn't really talk about how difficult it was. So my kids had a very active, full life. They still had a relationship with their dad. They saw him all the time because he lived very close by. That's and there was no problem with any of that. And even us as adults did things together.
Really? And that's awesome.
Oh, yeah. And the families did things together.
Yeah.
It was very convoluted, but it worked for us.
I think that's great when I hear about
that.
Yeah,
I'm sure there was chitter chatter in the background, but whatever. It doesn't matter.
There's always going to be some.
There's always chitter chatter.
Yeah.
So it was okay. It really was. And
were you a lot happier in that marriage? Was it very different?
It was a very different marriage. It was very different. And I was different. Everything was different. But it was, you know, and I learned a lot. You know, you learn a lot. I was a lot older at that point. And, you know, I hate when I say that it was a mistake, Kevin and I, because then I wouldn't have had my kids and they were never a mistake.
Exactly.
So I hate when I say that.
Yeah, I get it, but it's not. It was what you had to do in your personal life to evolve.
Yep, exactly. It was a great start. And then, unfortunately, Matt got very sick with lupus very early on in our relationship. And that became another whole layer of stuff that we had to deal with, which affected everybody in the household.
Can you explain the characteristics of lupus briefly?
So lupus is different for a lot of people. There's a lot of different ways that lupus shows itself. And unfortunately for him, lupus is not something that is generally a male gets. It's usually a hormonal issue. Or it's an autoimmune disease, you know, that's triggered by some, you know, hormonal stuff. So for men, it's very unusual to get lupus. And it took them actually a couple of years to even diagnose him. He had a lot of weird things that was going on in his body, pains and aches and rashes and mainly pain for him. It showed up in pain in his connective tissue, and they couldn't identify where the pain was coming from. He was a painting contractor, so many of the physicians thought it was all, you know, physicality stuff. Mm-hmm. So he was, you know, diagnosed with, you know, mobility issues, but it never made sense. So it took a couple of years for them to diagnose him. The way that they actually found out that it was lupus is he was hospitalized for pain. He was in such severe pain that they actually put him in the hospital for it. And he was in the hospital for 7 days, and they were doing blood draws every day and, you know, scans of his body because they couldn't identify where the pain was coming from. And it was actually a medical student that was looking at his urine sample and his blood work, I think like on the 6th day of the hospitalization, and saw something in his kidneys that came up in the blood work. And they did a biopsy, and then they found that he had lupus.
Oh, wow.
And it's called nephritis. So that's when he was diagnosed, and then it started the whole journey of now what do you do? Because he was physically in really bad shape.
Yeah.
And they had him all on prednisone and all sorts of immune suppressants and stuff, and he did years of therapies and trials, and which all affected his body. You know, he was on high doses of prednisone for a long time. He was in bed for almost a year. He couldn't get out of bed, so he was pretty sick. Yeah, okay. He was actually really sick when we got married. Well, they didn't know if he was going to live.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, so it was pretty
ugly.
And
you married him.
Yeah. Well, that was the thing. It was like that was our plan always. We were living together. We had a house. That was the plan. But I was
you're like, I had made a decision.
I made a decision.
I mean, if it was love, it was love.
Yeah, and it was.
If someone gets ill, that's what you do, right?
He was against it because he really thought he was going to die. And I was like, okay, well, if you're going to die, then we need to be married, like, tomorrow. So we actually got married at his sister's house because we didn't even know if he'd be in a hospital or what have you.
Matt and Leslie loved each other and were determined to have a life together despite Matt's pain and medical issues. But that doesn't mean those things didn't take their toll. Leslie took on the role of being a caretaker, and though Matt worked hard to get better and maintained a positive attitude, Leslie started to feel the strain it was putting on their family.
I wasn't sleeping, and I was worried all the time, and I was, you know, I had the teenage kids, so that in itself
That's
is
stressful.
Crazy. I still had an ex-husband, so that was still crazy. He had a daughter, and that's always hard, you know, trying to blend all the kids and everything. He had an ex-wife, and then we had this illness that was mountains of stuff. So my life became very stressful because I take everything on. I'm that person. And I had a great career in real estate, which was also very stressful. I started unraveling. I'm 5 years younger than him. So he had to have been about early 40s when this started to happen, because when I hit 41, 42, my life started to become very uncontrollable from the stress.
Yeah.
So we were probably 3 or 4 years in at that point.
Well, what did that look like when you say you were unraveling?
So I truly was unraveling, and I wasn't sleeping. I started taking sleeping pills, specifically Ambien, and I started sleeping, and it was great. And so I took it every night, and I slept every night. And then, because I'm stubborn, I'm like, well, I'm not going to take this anymore. So I tried to stop taking it, and I couldn't. I couldn't sleep unless I took it.
Mm-hmm.
It was crazy. So I was like, well, I got to sleep. So I went right back on it. And then things got really bad. The side effects from it were terrible.
What were they?
Complete memory loss. So from the moment I would take it at night, the next day, if anything happened after I actually ingested the pill, I couldn't remember it.
Oh, wow.
So like say somebody would call and have a telephone conversation with me. I didn't remember the telephone conversation.
Oh.
There were times where my kids were like, you were supposed to pick me up at school. I'm like, when did we talk about that? And they're like, last night. And I'm like, I have no memory of that.
Oh, geez.
It was bad.
Yeah.
So this went on for a long time. I'm going to say this went on for a good year. And, you know, at first you don't notice these things, but then, you know, you start putting two and two together. So the joke in my house was, don't let mom make any decisions after she's taken the Ambien. I mean, it was
don't
aha.
Don't talk to mom after 10
Don't
o'clock.
Talk to her. Well, I'd right? take it at 8.
Oh, geez.
By 8 o'clock, I would take it. And sometimes I took it with a glass of wine. But that was the joke. Well, it became not funny when I almost killed myself, my husband, and my son. Let me start from the beginning on this. So my son and I both had allergies. So my son took Zyrtec on a daily basis, and I took it when I needed it. So my husband had a doctor's appointment, and it was going to be an all-day thing. So I needed to drop my son off at a relative's house on the way to the hospital for this doctor's appointment early in the morning, and he was just going to spend the day there. So get up in the morning, do our normal routine, which is taking a Zyrtec. My son, I always gave him every morning a Zyrtec. He had terrible allergies. And I took one. We get in the car. I'm driving. And I lived on top of a mountain. We lived in the country. And I'm driving down the mountain road. And evidently, I was on the wrong side of the road.
Oh, boy.
And I was falling asleep in the car. And Matt was yelling at me. I remember that. Matt was yelling at me. And my son was in the back seat, saying, I don't feel good. I feel all tingly. Something's wrong. And I remember Matt screaming, pull over. And I did. And he took over and he was driving. We dropped my son off at his sister's house. We proceed to go to the hospital. We check in. And he was in lab work all day and testing. And I was in the patient waiting room. And I slept the whole day. And I kept thinking to myself, what is wrong with me? Like,
oh,
what the hell's wrong with me? And we go to pick my son up from his sister's house. And when we get there, she says, I don't know what was wrong. He was so tired all day today. So we get home, we get settled. The next morning, I go to the cabinet to give him a Zyrtec. And what is sitting in the front of the cabinet but the Ambien bottle? And then it was like, oh, my God. I didn't know what happened. Like, the day before, we were just going through the motions of all this stuff. And that was the moment that everything changed for me in my life. Because I now had put my son in harm's way. I got behind the wheel of a car, totally on sleeping drugs. I could have killed all of us, honestly, because yeah. I was falling asleep at the wheel of the car when I was going on the other side of the road. Nobody knew it at the time because we didn't know that that's what I had taken. And we didn't know why my son was falling asleep and feeling tingly because we didn't know. But that was when everything changed for me. I was like, okay, something's got to give. Mm-hmm. This was that, you know, they say you got to hit the bottom, the rock bottom, the hole.
Yes.
I was deep in that hole.
Yeah.
And I remember calling my doctor and because I didn't investigate anything about the Ambien. And then I started reading the side effects. And I think Ambien was a pretty new drug at the time, quite honestly. Yeah. But that was a turning point for me. And again, you know, things happen for a reason. Thank God nothing bad happened that day and we all lived. Mm-hmm. And I saw it immediately the next morning, what I solved the mystery of why I was falling asleep. But I call my doctor and I'm like, I'm not taking it anymore. I'm done. Because you're supposed to wean yourself off of that. I'm like, I'm done. She goes, okay, well, maybe you should take some Tylenol PM. I remember like thinking, this is crazy. This is insanity.
Yeah.
And I went off at cold turkey and I didn't sleep for weeks.
Oh,
I didn't, because you truly become addicted to it. Because what Ambien does is it cuts off the brain, the nervous system. That's how you fall asleep. It shuts down your brain.
Yeah.
And that's why the short-term memory starts to go. But that was a great turning point in so many things for me, because that's when I became very aware of health and wellness from alternative medicine. Mm-hmm. I started questioning everything the doctors were doing with MAP because that wasn't working. And I'm like, there is something wrong here in our medical model. And that's when I started becoming very holistic and, you know, doing things differently and finding different ways to do it and finding the people that could help me do it. And even with him, we started doing like Chinese medicine on some things for pain. And so, it, you know, again, good things come from bad things sometimes.
Yep.
If you survive the bad ones.
Caveat there. If you survive, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Yes.
Yeah. But then, you know, life was still rough. So now I'm learning how to sleep without sleeping pills and, you know, cope with my day. And Matt was, you know, his situation was good, bad. There was a lot of up and down. And I think that life caught up to me.
Mm-hmm.
So even though I had, you know, gotten out of a marriage that was unhealthy, remarried, were surviving the daily goings on of the illness and being a caretaker. And we had some great times, you know, family vacations to Outer Banks. We had some really good times, but life started to catch up. And then, of course, I was in my late 40s. Going into, you know, premenopause and menopause, I went early. So all that was happening. And, you know, life was still kind of sticky. There was a lot of messy, ugly things still going on, as life brings you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I just stopped coping. I had been in it knee deep for a long time without really running.
Mm-hmm.
I went in, you know, full throttle, and I was starting to lose my ability to cope.
Well, that fight or flight response is meant to save your life in a certain instance. You're not meant to live there, and you can only be strong for so long.
Yeah. And I was trying to change, but other people in other situations and circumstances weren't changing around me that I needed them to change. And again, you know, all parties working at their hardest, but it wasn't working together. And my kids were now grown. My daughter was coming out of college. My son was in college. I had been in real estate for like 12 years. I was burnt out. I was tired. I was totally menopausal. So my, you know, ability to cope in general was not great. And I was done. But mm-hmm. I was starting to have physical signs of being done, like these panic attacks. And there were things going on. There were things that were happening in my family unit and in my life that were causing me great stress. But I was starting to have physical things like panic attacks that I had never had a panic attack, and out of control. And I do not like to be out of control. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, what am I going to do? Because this is not working for me.
Once Leslie started making changes in her life, she realized quitting Ambien wasn't the only change she needed to make. Her family was surviving instead of thriving, and she knew they needed to do something different.
I am full throttle, and I am 150% in until I get to the point where in is no longer where I can be.
Right.
And it is a survival instinct. Mm-hmm. And I feel fortunate to have that instinct. You know,
yes.
Some people might say it's a weakness and running is a weakness. I don't even, I use running kind of loosely.
Right.
Because I didn't run without thought.
Right.
It was a well-planned escape.
Mm-hmm. So let's think of a different word. It's not running. It's adjusting or.
I use pivoting now.
Pivoting.
That's my word now.
You know, that's a word for the era, right?
Yeah.
Pivot. So you pivot. A planned pivot is saving your life. It's not running as in being a coward.
I tell women all the time, or anybody, even if it's a man, because mm-hmm. a man could be in this situation too. I tell people all the time, if this is not working for you and it's destroying everything in you and around you, mm-hmm. which it was. But I was the only one that was willing to do something about it.
Right.
I feel it's like my superpower, quite honestly,
yeah.
you know, because it's not an intentional trying to hurt people or run away from a problem. I stick it out. And then, you know, then there's a time when it you got to just move on.
Yeah.
And I hope I've taught my kids that to some extent, too, through
right.
some of my actions, that it is okay not to be okay, mm-hmm. but then do something about it. Don't stay in whether it's a job situation or a relationship or a circumstance, don't stay there and punish yourself and punish everybody around you. Do something about it. Mm-hmm. Even if that doesn't work, then do something else. And I'm a true believer in that.
Amen. So am I.
And that's what brought me here to, you know, to Myrtle Beach.
Well, did that lead to a divorce with Matt before you did that?
So it did. And, you know, that was a very calculated decision as well, because that was a situation of how do I protect myself financially? Because truly, I was concerned about that because of some of the things that were going on. And you know, I need to make a move, and he didn't want to make the move with me. He was very adamant about it. And again, we did everything. We did the counseling. I did the kicking and the screaming and the crying and all of it. And I was heartbroken this time. This was a heartbreaking situation for me. I was not heartbroken my first divorce at all. Mm. There was no heartbreak. I wanted out. I needed out. It was this was completely different. I was heartbroken that his choice was different than my choice. And over what was going on. And we had owned this place in South Carolina that we had bought a couple of years previously as just, you know, long-term investment here in Myrtle Beach. That's how I ended up here. So in the divorce, this was, you know, part of the settlement. But yeah, it was heartbreaking. I was devastated. That was not what I wanted. But I had to make that decision because it was my future.
Mm-hmm.
And I can honestly say that, you know, that was a terrible time for me. My divorce to my first husband was a hard time. It was hard, but it was not a terrible time.
Mm-hmm.
This was horrible. It was heartbreaking. And this was the second love of my life in my mind that I lost. He was, you know, very much a medical patient at that point in so many ways. And I just had a different vision of our future from a happy, healthy future for us versus, you know, an unhealthy, unhappy future. And he was heading towards the unhealthy, unhappy. He was paralyzed by his illness. He wasn't making good decisions because his illness was preventing him to function at a higher level.
And but that's not his fault necessarily.
It wasn't his fault, which made it even more heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Because I had spent the better part of our life together taking care of him and us taking care of each other during this period. You know, we had a good relationship. The fact that we made it as far as we did with all the stuff with his illness yeah. was a miracle. It really was.
Yeah.
And still having life, children and, you know, right. life. We had still had life going on. We didn't live in a bubble. Far from it.
Leslie's life was moving forward, and that led her to Myrtle Beach. You see, years earlier, Matt and Leslie had purchased some investment properties in the Grand Strand that they could eventually retire to. So when they got a divorce and Leslie needed a place to go, she moved into one of those properties and started over. She got a job, made friends, and found joy.
So I got a part-time job at Broadway on the Beach, working at a little boutique. But my job was from 4 o'clock in the evening or early evening till 11, till closing, because I needed to go to the beach during the day, because that's what you did when you moved to Myrtle Beach.
Sure.
So I'd go to the beach during the day, and then I would work from 4 to 11. I think I made $10 an hour, and it was so much fun. I got to meet all the tourists, you know, and all the people. And that lasted for a while, and then, you know, then I was like, okay, Leslie, like, this is not sustainable. You need to make more money than this. I had a resume that was, you know, exceptional from all the things that I've ever done in my life. I gave my resume to one of the guys in my HOA, and he forwarded it to, at the time, was First Federal Bank, because he knew somebody that worked there. And they called me, and I went in, and I interviewed, and my first real job here was at First Federal Bank, being a bank teller. I hated it because I was nervous all the time, counting money. I met some really nice people, though. And that's kind of started my working experience down here. And then I had a normal life. I worked during the day. I went to the beach on the weekend. By now, I knew some people. And Matt was coming down to visit. So he was coming. And, you know, when you first move here to the beach, you get visitors.
Yes.
Your friends come. Mm. So I was getting visitors. My kids came. Now my kids were older and living on their own. So I kind of, once I started working at First Federal, I had a normal everyday life. I was no longer a touristy kind of lifestyle. And then things started to unfold, and Matt then moved down here.
He followed you down.
He followed me down a year later. He moved down here 1 year later.
And your divorce had been final.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
We were divorced.
So did he move in with you?
Yep. He came, and we moved. We're back together. We're still together. That was how many years ago? We're still together.
Well, and I see rings on your finger.
Yeah.
So did you get remarried?
We did not. This was my grandmother's ring. We did not. But we live as a married couple.
Yeah.
I refer to him as my husband. Well, I guess now people will know we're not married, but most people think we are married.
Hey, it's all.
But it's all my story. And I'm not ashamed of it. And I'm not, you know, it is my story. And you know what? I have found out that it's other people's stories, too. I'm not, you know, it used to be so people would be like, what?
Well, could you get married?
We could.
Why haven't you?
Because I made a plan.
Oh, the plan.
The conscious decision. I can't go through what I went through again with a divorce.
Mm-hmm.
I can't go through that again. It was devastating. And he would get married in a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. He wanted to get married as soon as we moved down here. He moved down here. I can't do it. I can't go through that emotional thing again. And it's weird because it's just a piece of paper, right? Because we live as a married couple.
Right.
And I refer to him as my husband, and he's always referred to me as his wife, even, you know, before he came back down here. I mean, it's weird. I know it's weird, but I cannot go there again where if we were to split up, that it was an actual, like, mm-hmm. divorce. I can't explain it. It was too much for me.
Well, and there's no need for it.
And there's no need for it because we do, you know, we live as a married couple. And we've had quite a life down here that's been crazy as well. But
how would you characterize your marriage? The second half of your marriage in Myrtle Beach.
So living one place so long, you know, I lived in New Jersey for so long. And then we raised our kids in New Jersey. And we had a different lifestyle in New Jersey. And then, you know, getting divorced and moving down here and then getting back together. It's a little weird and it's a little different because we don't have the same support system that we had up there. And we don't have those long-term friendships. But we've established new friendships and, you know, new lifestyles. And I work and I've been working for a long time, you know, since I've been down here. So I have a very normal lifestyle. His is a little bit different because of his illness, and he's had some other things happen since he's been down here with his illness, which prevents him from working. So he's, you know, his lifestyle is a little bit different than mine, even though we live together.
Well, how is his health since he's been down
here? So his health, I mean, the lupus is an interesting disease because lupus is an autoimmune disease. But what happens with lupus, it's not just the lupus itself that becomes detrimental to your health. It's all the things that happen when you have lupus and the inability to have a healthy immune system. He has no immune system. So he's had a lot of problems in his life. And he just had a lot of problems most recently with skin cancers, and he actually just had an amputation, a leg amputation, due to a lot of autoimmune issues.
Oh, wow.
So he struggles still pretty badly.
When did he lose his leg?
He lost his leg this year, the beginning of this year.
That's kind of fresh.
Yeah.
Huh?
So this is fresh, and it's a whole new lifestyle for him, and it's a whole new lifestyle for me. And he does have a prosthetic now, and he's starting to drive. He had his car converted, so he's able to drive. But it's still a very different lifestyle. You know, we have three dogs and, you know, we have a full life and grandchildren and all sorts of things. So
looking back at her life, Leslie recognizes how far she's come and she appreciates the lessons she's learned. She's happy where she is, but still looks forward to her future growth.
I'm glad to be out of my 30s and 40s, like really glad. Those were rough decades, and I think it's rough decades for many women. And now maybe with women getting married later and having children later, you can include the 50s in that too.
Yeah.
I've learned lessons, but you want to go back to the 20s, the 30s and 40s. 30s and 40s were rough for me, really rough for me. And when I turned 60, I was like, oh my God. But I am really looking forward to 60s, 70s, and possibly 80s.
What do you think would smooth it all out and let you just breathe that sigh and be happy about what you've learned and where you are now?
I would like to say winning the lottery would be great, but I know that doesn't always work either. you know, I think for me, and honestly, I'm starting to come to this place, is I am taking life a little less seriously. I'm trying to take life a little less seriously, trying not to be so concerned with the outcome and the plan. And if I can master that, I think I'll be golden.
Yeah.
But I'm working on it.
Leslie is an incredible woman who has always taken life into her own hands. She learned that no matter how hard you try to control the world around you, stuff happens. Leslie's story exemplifies the importance of the pivot and of taking control of yourself when you cannot control what's happening around you. She shows us the value of letting go and embracing peace while not settling and becoming despondent, and how crucial it is to find joy in the world and enjoy that when it comes along.
If you've been inspired by this story or any others, please take a moment to subscribe, rate, and review.
We don't just get away at the beach, we get together. Because no matter what floats your boat, we're floating right along with you. With over 2,000 restaurants, live music all day and night, and endless attractions, Myrtle Beach was made for having fun and beachin' easy. Welcome to 60 miles where you belong, the beach. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Plan your trip at visitmyrtlebeach.com.